Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everybody, this is Blue Otter, coming to you from Booker County, and the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America, Southern Missouri, and our guest for the weekend beginning Saturday, the 28th of August, is Grandfather Blue Wolf. Grandfather Blue Wolf operates a website at www.earthkeepers.net. And Grandfather Blue Wolf and some other elders are planning a trip very soon to Africa. They have cultural contacts over in Africa, and as a result of this interview, you folks are going to be hearing some other very, very special treats. We've been looking for an inroad into Africa, and I'll let Grandfather Blue Wolf fill you in a little bit more about what's happening at OCO. Grandfather Blue Wolf, tell the folks about yourself.
OCO. Well, we're up here in Talking Rock, North Georgia. We call this place Wale. We make herbal products, herbal medicinal botanicals, and we distribute them. And the profits from those medicines and the various stores go to support the environmental projects that we're involved in through Earth Keepers, such as this Clean Water Coalition we have. Now, one of our main focuses, you see, is on our drinking water, huh? We're ceremonying around the water all over the world at this time. All the indigenous people have come together with an indigenous network to ceremony around the water. And so we're focused on that. And then some of the profits from the sales of our products are distributed to our animal programs, wildlife rescue programs, huh?
Oh.
Yeah, like the relocation of some wolves, you know, and the bird sanctuaries for our predatory birds. And then just all kinds of animals are in distress these days for one reason or another. And so we have sanctuaries and kind of like little spiritual hospitals for these animals to come to and revive themselves and kind of get a grip on what's going on, you know, because you know, we're all kind of in this together, you know, this dream. And so for some of the folks and some of the little brothers, it's kind of become kind of a nightmare. So we have proposed to create these sanctuaries where they can kind of get back into the dream time. And so then some of the money goes to support the work that's being done on these children's programs. You know, that's our other main focus, is children. And so the work that's being done for equine clinics and horsemanship therapeutic programs, traumatized youth and adolescent substance abuse, and all kinds of abuse, actually, for our children is just unacceptable, you know. So we work on that, and that's kind of what we've been up to these days, working with the children, working with the water, you know, and trying to create a safe and warm place for the animals, you know. So that's what we've been up to.
I know that's important. I remember when we moved here from Utah, and I went to the store one day. We're in rural Utah, and about 30 miles south of Moab, you know, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And fellow pulled up to the store in a small blue pickup truck, and he was to drive. He had his head out the window. His windshield was totally destroyed.
Mm.
It just looked like a white wall. And I said, "Man, what happened to you?" And he says, "Well, it hit an eagle."
Mm-mm.
And he told me where he hit him, and turned out to be hurt. And so I ran up there and looked for her and got out of the car and walked down this dirt road, and it was up in the cedars. And I was able to find her. And she wasn't going to go anywhere unless a coyote or something showed up. So we had a
a little black sweater in the car. So I just took the black sweater and hung it on a branch and went back and left word with the wildlife people exactly what mile marker and what little side road to need to go to. And I said, just walk until you see the the black sweater and take a left-hand turn and quietly go on about 100 yards. And they found her. They found her. She had a broken wing. But these animals have, encounters with automobiles and other things. They need a place to heal. And
that's right.
Sure commend you for what you're doing. And for the children, too, my degree was in youth leadership, and I was an executive with the Boy Scouts of America for 3 years, and my first wife and I worked at Father Flanagan's Boys Home in at Boys Town, Nebraska as family living instructors, and then later on we ran a youth home in Rock Springs, Wyoming also at the Youth Homes Incorporated, so yeah, it's that's important things to do.
Yeah, we're working on that, and then, you know, in 1978 we started a prison ministry.
Oh.
We've been doing that for a long time, and so it's been kind of escalating, of course, you know, as the prison population's been growing lately. And so now we have a ministry for our incarcerated brothers, you know, in the federal prison system, huh?
Yeah.
It's all over the country, so we do a lot of that, too, you know. We're so glad, I guess. Say that we're glad, you know, that we have these opportunities to do our lodges in the prisons with our brothers. You know,
have things changed any in Ohio? I understood Ohio was about the worst state to get any kind of Native religious things going on in prisons. Have things changed in the last 10 years that you know of?
Well, I can tell you this: things are always changing, and it's kind of like a roller coaster. Sometimes they'll be up and sometimes they'll be down, and it's like all over the place. It's like that, and as soon as you think you got a handle on it, somebody comes along and moves the suitcase. And it's been like that all over the United States, you know. And I'll be thinking, well, things are going pretty good out there in Kansas, and the next thing you know, somebody's elected or some warden shifts or, you know, something changes, and then everything changes, and we'll be doing good at one prison. They'll let us build a little cabin, you know, and maybe we can, like a little greenhouse, you know, and we can grow our own sage and sweet grass and maybe some willow trees and build a sweat lodge, and the next thing you know, the warden changes, and they come in and cut down all the sage, and they cut it all down and start all over, and then it's kind of like 3 steps forwards and 2 steps backwards, and you know what I mean? And so right now, I'm wanting to have a plan. I'm working on a program with the Department of Defense, Department of Justice, the Department of Justice to grow food, you know, in the prison. You know, just grow a little bit of food so that we can garden, you know, so we can grow some sage and some sweetgrass and some osha roots, you know, and maybe grow some tomatoes, you know, and some vegetables, you know, to eat.
Oh, that's a good idea. That way you'd say we'll grow some vegetables if you let us grow our sacred items.
Yeah, and then we could, and then, you know, there's several acres of land in these prisons that are just not used for anything, and so we thought we could grow some food, and then it could help to augment the budget there in the prison for food, you know, and they'd be eating good food that they grew, and then all this good energy would be coming out of there.
Wow.
Because it's really a good thing to work with the earth in that way.
That's great.
And there are some prisons that are doing it now, some in California, you know, and some in Texas, you know.
Oh, you know, it costs a couple $100 to get a drip irrigation system for, like, 500 feet a row, and you can do a lot. Are you familiar with the peyote case that was settled out in Utah very recently?
Yeah.
That, it was really interesting. I knew the principal people involved. I lived in Gunnison, and the state prison was right at Gunnison, and James Mooney, who's the head of the Oakland U-Haw, in fact, he'd be a relative of yours. He's Seminole. He's Creek also. He's from here in Missouri. The Chickamauga Confederacy folks have moved down
he was it's a really fascinating story. He worked in the prison system as a drug rehabilitation counselor, and his he ran public ceremony also, so he got to know him fairly well. He lived in the same town. We shopped at the same store, but James did such a good job that he had like a 15% recidivism rate, which is nothing short of phenomenal.
Mm.
And, he related the story of once this recidivism rate lasted for two and a half years, there was a group of people that came down from the prison system in Salt Lake City, and men and women, and the first thing that came out of the first person's mouth, it was a woman, she said, "Well, we want to know what kind of witchcraft you got going on here." They just couldn't believe. You can talk about insult.
Mm.
But anyway, we left Utah, and then a few years later, we heard about what was going on with their Native American church, and I could see, where he and his wife, I knew her too, where they went through a lot of hell out there, and I was very, very surprised at the decision, but I think it was a good one, for the folks that, but that's their way. It's not Cherokee way, but I know from speaking with we had a good friend in near Cortez, Colorado, Alan Nezkai.
Mm.
And Alan was a full blood Navajo. His father lived over 100, and so did his grandfather, but he was only, I guess, in his late 50s and diabetic, and he'd had several amputations, and he had been a Christian minister, and they ran him out. So he went back to went to Peyote Church, I guess, with his father's way, and had a very successful a Peyote ministry there just south of Cortez, with a nonprofit organization, and we attended an honor powwow for him just before he passed away. Just a beloved, beloved man. And but from what I understand, with some friends of ours who were mixed breed Lenape white and Scott Irish and Lenape, they participated in a lot of ceremony with Alan, and they said there's a lot of love that when they partook of the peyote. Well, I understand you're headed off to Africa here pretty quick.
Yeah, on the 7th, we're going over there, and we still have a little fundraising activities going on to help us out with the documentary. We still need some help with some of the equipment and such for the documentary, but we're leaving on the 7th, and going over to South Africa and up into the border there into Zimbabwe, huh? And then over to Mozambique, and then back down through the Kruger Park there, back down to a place called Mahalisburg, and it's called the Spirit Mountains, and then we'll do some ceremony there, and we're meeting with some leaders of some various tribes. There's about 7 tribes that we're meeting with, the Zulu nation,
mm-hmm.
and the Shangaan nation, and the Bavenda nation, and the Limba nation, and the San people, just to name some of them. And then people like, you mentioned Credo Mutwa earlier, Busa Mazulu Credo Mutwa, they call him Baba, and we'll be meeting with him, and doing some councils with him. We're real thrilled to meet with him. He's such a powerful person over there, he's like the medicine person for the Zulu nation.
Absolutely.
They call him a Sangoma, huh? He's like the lead Sangoma.
Yeah, anybody that's
the high Sangoma.
Anybody that's heard of David Icke interview has heard of
Credo.
Credo Mutwa.
And then we're meeting with another lady over there that is very revered in the whole continent. Her name is the Rain Queen Mojaji. She's the spiritual leader for the Bavenda people, and she calls the rain for the country.
Huh.
very honored position, and she's been doing it for several thousand years. The Rain Queen. We're excited about meeting with her. And then we're meeting with Chief Shabasi, and we're meeting with Grandmother Maria. We're meeting with Pops Mohammed, who is a very revered person. You know, there's a kind of interesting, you know, it's a beautiful thing, really, that there's so many tribes that we've met with, from the Ainu Saparo over in Japan, you know, to the Quechua people in Peru, you know, and no matter where we go, a fella might tell you, you know, you say, well, you know, so how's it going over there? And he says, oh, it's going good, you know, I got some good food, I play my drum, you know. I said, oh, you play drums? He said, yeah. He said, that's what I do. I'm a drummer. You know, I play the drum. But you ask the people in the village, and they'll tell you he's their spiritual leader. He's their medicine man, you know. But you ask him, and he'll tell you all he does is play the drum.
That's right.
That's a good thing.
That's right.
Yeah, so I met this fellow, you know, Pops Mohammed, who says that, you know. He says, well, I just play the drum. That's all I do. And but I know he's a powerful medicine person over there.
Very humble.
Yeah, and he'll tell you he's, you know, he just plays music, you know. So what happened was, you know, this lady, this beautiful lady, Grandmother Noria, sent some folks over here a couple of years ago. She had a dream that corresponded with it, a dream time story that my grandfather told me. You know, we was talking about a while ago, you and I, about the past. There's a lot of beautiful stories about the past, and a lot of stories we just soon forget about the past, you know.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some case cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website, with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
But there was this one story where we were relocated from this area at one point, or there was a strong attempt to relocate the indigenous people from this area to the west. I'm talking about this area, the southeast of the country here, you know. The Cherokee people, the Creek people, the Anikusa, the Choctaw people, you know, move them all out west. This was around 1830. And it was Andrew Jackson was involved in that relocation. The president, at the president of the United States at that time. And so as a lot of these folks were moving and getting ready, and, you know, there was a lot of fear and a lot of apprehension, a lot of deceit, a lot of manipulation, just a whole lot of various kinds of things going on, never mind all the atrocities. And it was just kind of a mess, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of the spiritual leaders, as the story goes, at that time were looking for a safe place to put a lot of the medicine songs and a lot of the information that was born in the hearts and dreams of all the ancestors. And so what they did, they held a big ceremony, not just one, but they held a big ceremony, and they put this most sacred of sacred music and songs and prayers and information into this beautiful place in Dreamtime, telling everyone that the only people who would have access to this information and these songs were the people who could go to that beautiful dream place. So that's the safest place that you could put information like that. Because only people who have the capacity and facility within which to enter those beautiful dreams will ever know that information, and it's okay for those folks to know it, because they have arrived. People who live in the nightmare will never have access to those dreams, see? People who perpetuate the nightmare. So, and they said, you know, when this dream becomes a way of being, the right people will have those dreams, and the music will come back, the songs will come back, the medicine will come back, and we'll be back once again in this beautiful dream place that we are now leaving as we move out west. So, corresponding with that story, here's Grandmother Noria over in Africa, who's having these dreams, huh? About my grandfather.
Huh.
So she sends some folks over here to tell me about these dreams that she's had. And I'm just looking at them, you know, thinking like, You know, because I knew the story, but I thought it was going to come from the indigenous people of this country. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I get to thinking. So I sent the message back and said, yeah, you know, I want to know more. She says, I have these songs. And they belong to you, and they belong to your family, and they belong to your people. And you need to come and get them. I'm too old to travel. You know, she's like in her 90s, huh?
Yeah.
So she threw the bones. And that's how she got my name and where I live and all this information. You know, I don't know anybody in Africa, you know, before that, you know.
My word.
So, she's been orchestrating this whole trip, see, from that perspective, and she has gathered these other leaders together to do ceremony over there, all around this beautiful place in a dream of 1,000 years of peace. You know, this prophecy of indigenous people holding on to their land and the dream in the heart of this healing place where babies are safe and babies have somebody to love on them and somebody to love and food to eat and family and a village to be raised in and all the good things in life that matter about balance and harmony and nurturing and kindness and you know, all these things, harmony, all these things we long for, never mind just this beautiful place of unconditional love where you have community, you know, you have community that matters, you know. And so, and you have good water, you know, and good food, and everything is just like this dream, you know, and it used to be that way. And so all these leaders, the Rain Queen and Credo and Baba Credo, and Grandmother Noria and Janet Windwalker, this clan mother of the long hair clan I was telling you about earlier from Texas
Jerky,
who's going with us, yeah. they know this story, see, and they're all involved in this this retrieval program to go over there and this process of getting the songs, you know, bringing them back here to our people. And she says, she sent a message, and she says, you know, and the ones who are coming on this trip over there to get this music from her have something that belongs to the African people. We have something that belongs to them, she said. So, of course, I get the word back to her, and I go, what could I possibly have that belongs to you? She says, well, I don't know, but I'll know it when I see it. I know you're carrying it. She's got a sense of humor. And so I'm just so, you know, it's like I'm just so blessed, you know, to be here at a time like this and be involved in such a beautiful journey of such, you know, personal kinds of processes that have to do with the dream that my great-grandfather told me about, that my grandfather talked about, and now I have become my grandfather, I have become my great-grandfather, and I'm still, you know, in this dream thing that was presented to me as a child, and it keeps on going, and it's just a beautiful thing. And so that's what this trip to Africa is about. It's about all these indigenous folks coming together, you know, these earth keepers, huh? Various tribes all coming together with unity and diversity and cultural significance at this time, where we pay attention to our hearts and the dream of this one thing, you know, this relationship with the earth and all of its inhabitants in a good way. You know, it's like when we say all my relations, you know, that's not just an intellectual comment, you know, that's actually a heartfelt connection that's as real as, you know, your feet and your hands and, you know, your eyes, you know. We are connected to each other, and it's just as real as that.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true.
Well, we're excited about this trip, and so we're going to do all this, and we're planning on coming back on the 22nd. And anybody wants to come with us, we still got about 8 seats on the bus.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it is what it is. It's kind of like these lodges, you know. Lodges have a life of their own, you know. When you follow the lodge, it all works out just perfect. You invite some folks to the lodge. Sometimes they show up. Sometimes they don't.
Now, when would you be leaving?
September the 7th.
Okay. And what, if anybody out there... is interested in going, what would the cost of the trip be?
Well, that varies on airlines and such, but...
So they have to meet you there?
Well, the airline ticket right now, whether you go through, you know, right now we're flying on Delta, we're flying on Air France, we're flying on South African Airways, there's several planes going over there depending on where the folks are leaving from. We've got people leaving from Germany and France and California and Texas and, all, you know, just all over the place who are going to rendezvous there in Africa, you know. And so, depending on where a person's coming from, the trip costs anywhere from $2,000 for a round-trip ticket to about $800 for a round-trip ticket.
Right.
And then sometimes people got, they have, like, vouchers or buddy passes, or they fly standby, and then you get all kinds of discounts if you do that. The accommodations over there are such that if I think probably it's such a variation on cost that the best thing to do would be, if somebody was interested, to contact me at bluewolf@earthkeepers.net, the email.
bluewolf@earthkeepers.net.
Yeah, just email me. Or I can give you a phone number if they don't have computers. If they don't have a computer, they won't be listening to this show.
Right. Right, absolutely.
So it'd be bluewolf@earthkeepers.net.
What do you think the future of the documentary? You think it's something that like PBS would pick up?
Well, you know, we're going to submit it. We've already applied for a submission into the Sundance Film Festival and to the Atlanta Film Festival.
Wow.
and we're going to put it in various museums, you know, to have it run, like, you know, various kinds of museums of natural history and IMAX museums and such around the country.
Do you know how to engineer video for the web? I do, if you need some help.
Oh, great. Yeah, that was another thing, you know, archive it on the internet, because basically we want to just have this information out there so everybody has access to it. We want to show... See, the other thing, you know, these ceremonies are about peace, you see. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk right now, a lot of interest, and a lot of people who are saying they're going to this country and that country to talk about peace. And often it's really not about peace, it's about economy. You know, it's about economics.
Right.
And peace as it applies to certain economics. But the peace is peace, you know. It's not something that you buy. It's not something you negotiate. You have to be peace, you know. You have to, the words of our people, you know, you have to be the change that you want to see in the world. You can't just talk about it as if it's outside yourself. You want to talk about relationships, you got to be in relationships. You want to talk about peace, you got to be a peacekeeper, a peacemaker.
Right.
And so that's what this is about. It's, you know, it's about making peace. And so from that standpoint, we want that message to be spread, see, everywhere, that, you know, 80% of the population of this planet is made up of indigenous people who, so far, haven't really had an active voice. Mostly what you hear is the information coming from first world nations, you know, the powerful eight, the G8 group, you know.
The conquerors who are the ones that write the history.
The dominant culture mentality, yeah.
Right.
You hear their stories, see, and that's pretty much it. So, and you don't really get a chance to hear all sides. You know, it's like in this country, you know, you hear the story of the, you know, like this country didn't have a past before the American Revolution, you know, when the country was discovered by, you've seen these t-shirts, I'm sure, from the res, you know, they're coming off, they say, you know, it has a picture of Geronimo on the front of the t-shirt, you know?
Right.
And then across the top, it'll say, Homeland Security, you know, uh-huh. That famous picture of Geronimo holding his Winchester,
I've seen it.
You know? And then across the bottom of the picture, it says, Fighting Terrorism Since 1492. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And so this is, you know, we weren't just a bunch of folks bumping into trees, you know, before 1492. You know, we had a very sophisticated culture and lifestyle over here that had worked for thousands and thousands of years that was just beautiful, you know. And so magnificent. It was the dream. It was a dream. It was so beautiful. And so, you know, that's the story. And so, and it wasn't just in this country. The same thing was going on in Australia with the Aborigines, with the Maoris in New Zealand, with the Ainu in Japan, when Japan was taken over about 500 years by the Chinese.
Right.
You know, about 500 years ago. And then the Ainu was conquered, let's say, and then shifted up into the northern part of Japan. And so then the Chinese and the Koreans took over Japan. Then the indigenous people of Japan became a problem. So Japanese history was written by the dominant culture.
Right.
The same thing's happening in Africa right now, see. And so, and so if we don't start talking about this and spreading this and holding councils about this and getting this information out, either through music or on the internet or in films or in documentaries, there's a chance that people might just not know about it. You know, because sometimes we'll talk about things with people and they'll say, you know, I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know that the Native American religion was once upon a time a felony. I didn't know
that. 1979.
Yeah, people say, I didn't know that. How could that be? The Constitution says you have the right to practice, you know, your religion in this country.
Well, up until, you know, up until before 1910, they were still hanging Indians here in Missouri. It was Missouri statutes from the inception of this state that if you didn't have a pass from the governor You could be removed in chains, or simply, under some cases, summarily executed. And I understood there was about 60 Cherokees that were hung in, where was it? Down around Mammoth Springs or something like that. Don't hear a whole lot about it, but it's things.
That's what I'm saying. You don't hear a whole lot about it. See, and it's time to talk about it. You know, it's time to make it, put it in the news and make it mainstream and talk about, you know, what's going on the Pine Ridge Reservation in the Black Hills with the Environmental Protection Agency and the Park Department, you know, and the Department of Interior, and illegal mining activities, and the sale of the Shoshone land out there in Nevada, you know, recently that President Bush signed that bill that allowed all that Shoshone land to be sold, huh?
We've asked
15 cents an acre.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated.
Good.
And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now. Marie
Osmond.
Put
it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
We personally have asked, I have a close friend in California who's personally asked Corbin Harney to come on. My teacher, Roland Thunder, had married into the Frank T. Moak band, and he was a spokesman for some of the Shoshone out there. Was very close to the Dan sisters.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. All that involvement right there with Corbin and the Dan sisters and all that, I mean, it's just a mess.
In fact, the week the weekend that I met Rolling Thunder in the early 90s, they'd gone in there and, see, what happened was is the Nwesegobia, the Western Shoshone people have, I believe, an 1870 some odd treaty, the Treaty of Ruby Mountains, as I could recall. And, you know, the government was serious enough back then that one of their men jumped the reservation, and what the Shoshones remember is the troops killed him, cooked him, and made the folks eat him. And I know that's an awful story, but things like that happened back then. But now that the federal government wants land to dump who knows what on, or to conduct nuclear testing, and that was on their land, and all of a sudden the Western Shoshone are supposed to suck it up.
Right.
Well, I guess what the Dan sisters did, from what I remember, my memory is not real good, that was 12 years ago, but I guess they filed on a spring. And were watering their cattle there, and I guess the big cattle people just came in with a couple pickup trucks and just put chains between them and just cut down. They had some buildings set up there. I guess they were built with railroad ties, from what I remember. And they just ruined the whole thing. Of course, you can't have a claim on spring if if you don't have some improvements there. And then they scattered all the cattle. And then the BLM comes in from time to time, claiming that they don't have the right to graze their cattle. And these people just get nothing but grief. And then the thing that Rolling Thunder, he told everybody about was how the BLM would come in and chain down all the pinion nut trees.
That's right.
And that these people lived off of. And then even what they were able to gather, the state of Nevada wanted a tax. So they are getting a pretty raw deal out there.
Yeah, all the illegal gold mining. And I mean, it's just a mess. And then the problem with Yucca Mountain, and the Hopi Land and the burying of the nuclear waste there and what they're doing to the Mi'kmaq fishing fleet. I mean, you could go all over the United States and look at just huge, huge problems with nations within nations and think, what the United States is doing in Afghanistan and what they're doing in Iraq. They've been in on Indian reservations ever since they formed them.
Nothing new.
Nothing new. I mean, so it's like, might makes right. What are you going to do? It's like, the big kid on the block. I just got to going in there and just doing what he wants to, and then all our people become political prisoners and arrested as extremists or terrorists or whatever, and so one person's freedom fighter is another person's terrorist, and so it's just a mess, see. And so, and the media spin on it is such that people don't really get the clear picture of what's going on. They'll be saying, this guy is a criminal, and everybody goes, And then when you go into when you go in and find out what really happened, you go, oh my God, I didn't realize that stuff could really go on, and say, it's happening, believe it. And so that's what this film is going to help, is educate and inform. And, we know it'll be beautiful because all of the folks in the countryside over there is beautiful. So it'll be a beautiful piece of work, and but mostly it'll be informative, to let people know what's in people's hearts, around the world and around what's happening on some other level right now, so we can help be a part of the transformation that's taking place at this time. Because, it's kind of like that old saying, if you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem, because you got to pick something, you got to do something.
That's right.
Yeah, so we're suggesting that offering this for people's consideration, that they consider being part of the solution for peace, and for the beauty way, huh?
Right.
Because it's all about the babies. If we don't have a beautiful place for our children to grow up and our grandchildren to grow up, then what are we doing?
That's absolutely right. It's all about them. And, we were, if something, they say if the message is important enough, it'll get through.
Mm.
And, experience with the Rain Queen. I grew up knowing I was Cherokee. I knew them. When I was 16, my uncles presented me with the genealogy. 37 of the family tried to enroll on the 1896 Dodge payment roll and were rejected because they didn't live in Oklahoma or Indian Territory at the time. But I guess when the time came, I was told in the early 80s, 3 or 4 times in 1 year, that when I turned 30 years old, that something very important would happen. And that year, turned 30 in December of 84 and 85, an old man appeared to me in a dream. And it was like he was sitting, it was like we were sitting opposite each other at a table. I could see him from the chest up. He had a white stone around his neck. his name was written in the stone, and there was a key embedded in the stone, and I wasn't able to remember what his name was that was written in it. But I just remember he was a full-blood Indian, and he said to me, when are you going to do something about, and he mentioned the name of my ancestor, Gardner Green, when are you going to do something about Gardner Green's genealogy? So that started things off, and I met some folks in Utah. There's, you know, Lenape people all over the place, and met some folks that were proselyting the Great Law of Peace, and associated with some other folks down in southern Utah, and like White Eagle Neal and Robert Three Eagles, who's been Dr. Robert Grossel's partner in some of the searches for red-haired mummies, and a lot of good folks. And then just, you know, but by the time my first wife passed away in April of 95, before she passed away, she just said, hey, you haven't even started your own work yet. And she became very prophetic, you know, before she passed away. And I said, well, what do you mean? She says, well, she says, Spirit told me your work's with your own people. And, you know, so figuring out who my own people was, that's been a defining moment. And, you know, I knew they were Cherokee, and then I found out they were Chickamauga Cherokee, you know, and which means the Chickamauga Confederacy, which brings in your people, and the Seminoles, and the Muscogee Creek, and the Yamasees, and the Shawnees, and all kinds of people, and including Six Nations people, and just all kinds of people, and these are people I've been working with, and, you know, I got involved long enough in tribal politics to know that that wasn't what I was supposed to be doing, and eventually met, you know, before I left Utah, I had some teachers, other than Rolling Thunder, Zula Brinkerhoff, who had been the daughter of, adopted daughter of the keeper of the Hopi prophecy, David Monangi, and was introduced to Thomas Bunyaki and other elders, and eventually I was introduced to John Red Hat, who was born into the Kutua Society and was enrolled in the Cherokee Nation, and he was old enough to also be enrolled in the United Kutua Band. He was born not too far from here in Missouri, and his teachers were two full-blood Cherokee grandmothers and a freed woman. And he grew up here and in Oklahoma. In the old Cherokee religion, learned to speak Cherokee and English, and but he grew up, you know, speaking the old dialect, and the old dialect, Ketua, was pronounced Ketura, and he remembers how his grandmother would trill the R. So he had some interesting thoughts about you know, what our origins are. Felt very strongly that that we came out of Samaria long, long ago. Some of the other Chickamauga people here teach that Atikulakula pulled the nation together in 1750 and said that we came from across the Eastern Ocean several thousand years ago. And the Ketua origin myth and prophecy says that we lived in an island off the coast of South America, and then we moved up here. But I learned a lot of really interesting things from John Red Hat. He was a member of the Long Hair Clan, which was the spiritual core of the clans, and a very wise man. He oddly enough, converted to Judaism, I guess in the 40s, when he was like 9 years old. He started having dreams about the Holocaust. Actually learned to speak German in his sleep. Was shown that it was the women that were really pushing the Holocaust more than the men were, and ended up, and this happened because he moved to Tulsa as a teen and was befriended by some Jewish boys, and eventually adopted by their father, John became a Levitical priest. And he eventually got dual U.S. Israeli citizen, but the thing that he taught was that, most people, what he told me was, he said, Blue Otter, he says, anybody you meet that claims to be a Cherokee expert is neither. He said, there are so many things that the Cherokee did. He says, we tried everything. He says, if you hear a rumor that a Cherokee did that or do that, he says, I'd give you dollars to donuts if it's true. And he says, we got good karma from some of it, bad karma from some of it. He says, but we had no paradise here. But he was a pretty wise man. He spent 28 years in the military, retired a bird colonel, did a lot of high-level work. I guess in his last assignment, he went out to Desert Storm, I guess, in the early 90s. But he passed away on the 30th of December this last year. And he was in a very good place. Creator spoke to him all the time. He didn't make a word without listening to Creator, and he had people like the beloved woman of the Mohawks that was a very close friend to his. A lot of elders highly respected him, and he was able to convince Chad Smith, Principal Chief of Cherokee Nation, to ask the nation to stop calling unregistered Cherokees wannabes. I mean, this man had a lot of influence, and there was a lot of good things going on around him. There's a lot of people that loved him, a lot of people hated him, but he was very vocal about what he thought was right, what he thought was wrong. But the thing that he impressed me with was that it was our job to lead the nations back to the Great Spirit. And after he passed away, I'm getting chills right now. It's really interesting. Shortly after he passed away, I was interviewed by a lady, and that spun this show off. And shortly thereafter, John appeared to me in a dream, and I used to drive truck. Had to, got a college degree, but I had to, to drive truck to move in here and get settled in here. But in a dream, we were driving around Denver. I was driving north from south to north in town, and he just hopped in the truck and had a load of logs, and he said, move over, and he got in the truck and started backing us up. Cool. And so from the dream I got was, he's backing us up. He was the founding elder for Proxy Keepers, and his influence continues, as so many people do. And his close friend Dottie Daigle wrote the book Red Hat Speaks. Mm-hmm. And she lived with him for 10 years, took care of him. He had level 3 emphysema, was a pretty sick man, but he kept going, had to be on oxygen most all the time. Creator put him where he wanted him, but back in the 60s, this man was very active in AIM. He became very close to John Lanza, who was, if anybody's read the Book of the Hopi, they're familiar with that name. And John's brother Mike was chief of, or the Kikmongwe of Oribi. And, they kind of looked at John funny, because all his life he was called Red Hat, and there was this prophecy about the true white brother would come with a red hat or cloak. Mm. So they always kept pretty close eye on him, and we basically this council is made up of Mike's relatives and John's friends and relatives, and we're the Twin Fires. I found out recently from a fellow, Dr. Tim Jones, who has, I guess a couple years ago, he said that anciently the Cherokee and the Hopi were the Twin Fires. Hmm. That if anybody in a Grand Council, and they would have, every few years, people from all over the continent would get together, or if they went to sacred places like Manitoba or other places, they... Any grand councils, if a Hopi or a Cherokee spoke, everybody shut up and listen. I was very fortunate to have good teachers, And we're very fortunate to have you. You're an excellent teacher, and we're grateful that you're going to help us to open some doors. I've always been very, very concerned about Africa. It was very, very difficult to find. See, the original website we put up in 1996, and it became wovoca.com, W-O-V-O-C-A.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it was very, very difficult to find African prophecies. Just like it was difficult to find Chinese prophecies. We found some more Moorish prophecies, black Muslim, and...
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better, I feel a lot better, and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
But I've been very, very concerned about very pushed to make contacts in Africa and make them feel welcome on this on our broadcast and be a part of it. And we're hoping that you'll be able to open up some doors.
Oh yeah, well, I'm already wanted a lot of information because, for instance, the Busumuzulu Credo has. A lot of princesses already in this country from Africa. They've been studying with him for years, and once they leave his compound over there, he sends them out on a mission, and they're dedicated to this mission, and they're all over the world. And there's a lot of them in this country that would be happy to, I'm sure, speak with you about this mission that they're on by way of Credo Mutua for one, and the Rain Queen for another, and just about everybody over there. They're global in their perspective. They understand that the world has to come together. There is no kind of nationalism anymore. There's no one way to do anything. We've got to act as one people. Because everything is connected. Bacteria from the Serengeti is being found in the Everglades.
Oh, my word.
The world is connected. Mother is breathing, and it's being felt everywhere. So, people in the Ainu Saparo were telling me things that were going on in Peru that they just, that they find out in ceremony because Creator tells them things,
Huh. Alberto Villoldo went down in South America, and he showed their holy people down there a globe. They'd never seen a globe of the earth, and these people knew exactly. They said, "Oh, well, you're from here,
right.
And these guys over here, they don't like you, and you're going to go. They're going to be going to war against you." And
right.
Amazing,
no.
It's just absolutely that people have, I grew up white, and it took me a long time to really learn to appreciate, I can understand anybody out there that wasn't raised a native, listening to this, to not be able to, I understand if you don't relate to some of these things, but, the traditional Jewish people, I understand, They say that there are 36 men in every generation that can transcend time and space and go anywhere.
Mm.
You know, we had Ted Silverhand on here just a few weeks ago, and he talked about Mad Bear Anderson.
Yeah.
Mad Bear was really the father of this show. I never met him. He died, oddly enough, in 1985. And he was a close friend of Rolling Thunder's, and I'm beginning to wonder if he wasn't the guy that came to me in the dream. But I didn't know until 2 years after I started doing this, putting all the posses up on the net, and I ran across his book in the bookstore there in Moab, and I always flipped to the back looking for prophecies, and was reading in there where he said, someday somebody's going to go all around the world, gather up all the prophecies and put them in one place. And I just went, oh, wow. And it was, at that time, it was so easy.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we've got, I think, 150 articles from 60 different nations, including Africa, Australasia, the islands, just, you know, every hemisphere, just about every nook and cranny on the planet.
Well, you know, all the prophecies I've been bumping into, they all resonate with one another.
Absolutely.
Especially the ones with the indigenous people.
Well,
my grandfather, you know, I was raised out in southern Alabama, you know, with Creek people, Lower Creek people.
Yeah.
And one of my grandfathers was Sam Little Bear, and the other one was Charlie Lightfoot.
What county were you raised in?
Escambia.
Okay. You're probably a cousin of Billy. I was talking about Billy Bowlegs. Red Eagle and my ancestor Red Wolf or Gardner Green. They, after the Chickamauga Wars were over, they moved down into Alabama. There's quite a story about what happened down there. But he was the son, a grandson of Chief Perryman of the Creeks, and his father was William Augustus Bowles. And William Augustus Bowles also had a Cherokee wife and fathered Chief John Bowles of the Texas Cherokee fame. But William Augustus he was an old pirate. He tried to form a Muscogee republic back in those days, and through a conspiracy between the Spanish, the Spanish and the English couldn't agree on anything, but they agreed on they wanted him dead. You're probably kinfolk. Our seventh great grandfathers probably were close friends.
Probably, everybody I meet, when I go out to Pine Ridge, everybody I meet, great grandson of Sitting Bull.
Yeah.
I mean, I never met so many Dakota people that were the. If they weren't the great-grandson of Sitting Bull, they were the great-grandson of Crazy Horse, you know.
Or American Horse.
Yeah.
I know a lady in West Hollywood, or in Hollywood, that's, she's a descendant of American Horse, and her people went up in Canada.
Yeah.
And she's half, and she's been in literary work for a long time, was close to Rolling Thunder. But Elizabeth Wilson. There's a lot of them out there. The Native American world is a very small world.
Oh, I know.
And
everybody knows everybody. Especially once I got involved in the prison ministry, 20-something years ago, I met so many people. It's like everywhere I go, I met somebody related to them.
Yeah.
Cousins, uncles, aunts, grandmothers. And so I said, gosh, it's like a small town.
Well, but
check them out. Everywhere. It's like our town is everywhere.
Yeah, well, a lot of them. When the wars were over and they wanted to keep fighting, they went, a lot of Chickamauga Cherokees and Creeks and Shawnees and everybody else in the Confederacy, they went out on the plains and joined up with the Sioux, So that's the reason why, one of the most common name, I think the most common name among Native Americans is Wilson. And that name, you can track and trace back to, comes out of Virginia. Married into the line that came down out of Pocahontas, went down through the descendants went down through the Creek and Cherokee nations and ended up out on the plains apparently. And you may have people, bad guys like Dickie Wilson.
I thought the two most names I keep running into, if it ain't Yazzie, it's Begay.
Oh yeah, that went among the Navajo, Yazzie and Begay. But some of the ones that intermarriages between the whites. You know, and, you know, I've had some really interesting things happen when I was training to be a trucker. One of my trainers is just kind of psychotic, and I asked to be changed, and literally had to sneak out of the room in the middle of the night. I was up in North Dakota, in up there, and I can't remember the name of the town, but and they put me on a bus, and this guy gets on the bus, full blood Indian, obviously had been drinking, and carried a buffalo skull. You know, they only see it on the bus, you know, it was mine. So he said, you know, naturally I thought, oh my gosh, I want to help keep this guy out of trouble if I keep him talking, and because I know if the bus driver smelled his breath, he'd just throw him off. But he was carrying buffalo skull ceremony, and he had to go to the bathroom for a minute, and came back, and when I handed back the skull, part of the skull, the back of the skull fell off of my hand. He says, "That's yours." But he was telling me, you've heard the story, now you're from Southern Alabama, you heard the story of Madoc?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I said, "Hey," I said, "you're man," he said he was Mandan Arikara, and he said his grandmother was the last Mandan speaker, and they were transcribing the language, and I said, "What's this about you guys, you know, possibly being descendants of a Welsh?" He says, "Oh yeah," I says, "absolutely." He says, we know, you know, that at one time 30% of our tribe, and you know, I mean, we're talking the 1830s, you know, when ethnographers and artists went up there, you know, they still had you know, white people running around, and you know, our when John Sevier was speaking to one of our chiefs, you know, he asked, you know, about Madoc, and one of the chiefs says, "Oh yeah, we chased him, had a big battle, ended up on a sandbar, and chased the, you know, the rest of them up the Missouri River, and that's where they went." And but you're talking about 1100 A.D. Madoc and 600 others came over here. The Britons had invaded Wales. They had murdered most of the Welsh priesthood, and those people were Cymri. And the Cymri, the Cimmerians, the Samaritans, and you know, they all come out of Sumeria, and you know, so do the Hittites and the Egyptians and the Hebrews, you know. So when the Lakota say Matakia Yasin, they mean it.
That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
That's what I was saying earlier. You know, that's why our African brothers mean it too.
We're related to them.
Yeah,
they are our oldest relatives. They were. Did you see that History Channel special about the I think it was called the Three Daughters of Eve?
Yeah, well, they called this place we're going the Cradle of Mankind.
Yep.
And so, and it's this place over there called Sterkfontein Caves, is where this skeleton was found.
Yep.
Of the first human.
Yep.
You know, and
they were able to trace the DNA all back to her.
Yeah.
And they said that she was black, and they said to everybody in Northern Europe, and they were able to year by year trace her DNA all the way out into Southeast Asia. And it was a fascinating show, and they said the only reason why people got lighter skin or smaller nostrils, you know, was because they had less melanin, needed less melanin in the skin when they went to the Scandinavia, and that was the only reason why they had variations over thousands of years. And you know, explains why you know, you have Melanesians and other people that have black skin and curly hair, and we are all related.
That's what I'm talking about.
They have proven it.
Well, you know, I'm looking at horses and deer and elk and bear and eagles and thinking, you know, my DNA spread out everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the water. I'm thinking the water is one of my sweetest ancestors, you know. I said somehow water is my grandfather, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, and it connects us all. You know, that's one of the things we were talking about, you know, the Cherokee people call the water the long man, you know.
Long man, the river.
Yeah, and so it's like comes from a place that has no beginning, goes to a place that has no end.
That's
the source
right.
of all of life, you know.
Very good.
Because it has a memory, you know. It remembers everything that's ever happened to it. And
that's right.
So we can really, really learn, you know, from the water. And it just kind of, without it, you know, there is no life. So that's our life. Yeah, so then it relates to song. I mean, we don't have a world, you know, without it. And so all of the people on this world, all of our brothers, no matter what shape they take, rely on this one substance, you know, along with air, you know. But water is the thing, you know.
That's amazing.
So we're all related to the dream fabric, you know, that we sustain ourselves in.
And that same water that was put on the planet, who knows when, it's still on the planet. It doesn't leave.
Mm-mm.
It just keeps coming back.
That's right. It's just kind of like this recycled kind of thing. I mean, it's this amazing process, this organic breathing entity. You know, it's alive, you know.
Do your people stop dance?
Mm-hmm.
I thought the Creeks did. You know, the first stop dance I ever went to, taught by Grandfather Richard Craker. And Grandfather Richard, he's the grand old Ottawahee here in Missouri and Arkansas, and very highly respected in Oklahoma also. He's Chickamauga Cherokee and Quapaw, and German, I believe.
Mm.
This is not too far from here, but he sat us down. He took, maybe 2.5 hours. He asked everybody who was there, maybe 60 people, you know, who was your mother's name, what was her name, what was her mother's name. He had to get everybody organized in the clans before he could dance. Then he explained the clans, what their sacred items were, what their taboo items were.
Mm-hmm.
And as he went around the circle, I could see that the items that one clan worked with, they had to go get them from another clan, and vice versa. They were taboo for them to gather them, but another clan had to gather them. And this symbiotic relationship that was set up by Creator for the planet and the biosphere is perfectly reflected in the clan system. It's just absolutely amazed me.
Mm.
And, you know, they say, you know, if you've never stop danced, you know, if you don't know your clan, you're not Cherokee. And, you know, there's a lot of people. If you've got one man, you know, between you, like currently I'm without clan, but my ancestors, you know, came from Bear Clan and Wolf Clan, and clan adoption is still a possibility for folks out there. And so if you're a Cherokee, and I might be the same way. I understand the Creek and Cherokee people at one time were more or less the same people, lived together. I understand that we fought sham wars, practice wars. Well, it's been pretty close. I'm not. What were you taught about that?
Well, you're
Muskogean people. It's a different language, but we've always.
It's a different language, and so we have another whole story about that. That goes back to that sacred mountain down here that produced the Choctaw people.
Uh-huh.
And then it produced the Chickasaw people, you know. And then it produced the Creek people. And then it produced the Cherokee people, you know. And so...
Can you say the name of the mountain?
Well, it was called Spirit Mountain.
Okay.
Yeah. And so this mountain, it was in, reportedly, I guess, in Mississippi.
Huh.
At a time when Mississippi had a mountain. And who knows? Could have been a mountain. Could have been a dream mountain.
We'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like
dehydrated.
And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm dying it right now. Marie
put it
Osmond.
Under your bed. Put it in your closet. Give it for Christmas to people and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
Now, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
I know my mother grew up in Vicksburg.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you an interesting story. A few years ago, I was contacted by a fellow by the name of Govinda Sanyal. Govinda was half East Indian, and the other half, he was Nottoway Indian.
Yeah.
And he came down from the line of people, the Nottoweka people, and he was a school psychologist on Staten Island, master's degree most likely, married to the state dancer of India. He was born in India, and he said that when he was, it's only a very interesting story, he said that he was talking with some Chickasaw elders some years ago, and he asked them whether they would be willing to confide in him the name of their clan. And when they said the name of their clan, he was absolutely floored because it was the very same name as the clan he was told he was a member of when he was married by his father in India. He went on to tell me about, you know, Cherokees call Kentucky Gandugi, and he began to relate to me all of the linguistic comparisons between the Cherokee and the old Dravidic Brahmin languages, and we also have another fellow who's done some research into the Phoenician languages, and in the 30s there was archaeological work done that tied the Cherokee people to the Phoenician people, explains why we always had to have an opening to the sea. Govinda said that these elders told him that their story was that they came from across the ocean, landed in Mexico, and they migrated up to a better climate. You know, it's pretty arid, you know, until you get up, you know, even into Texas, and they got into Mississippi and the piney country, and that's where they settled. Hope to get him on the show. He's kind of a shy guy, but boy, you even have a story to tell. It's just amazing. And
well, I can tell you, this is a story that my grandfather told me about us. He didn't tell me a whole lot about the Cherokee, and he didn't tell me a whole lot about some of the other people. But he told us, because we're part of a clan called the Star Clan. That's who we are, is the Star Clan people, the Star people. And that's one of the things that resonated over there, because so are the Zulu people. And so, and they come from an area around the Pleiades, you know, the Pleiadian.
That's what Grandfather Rolling Thunder said about some of the Cherokee people.
Well, that's what we did too, and so, and it was a part of the Star Clan called the Blue Clan, you know, the Blue Clan, huh? And so,
and it was a blue light. And so, and it resonated because the way the story goes, when these spirits were up in the Pleiades and they were looking out, they could see this blue planet, you know, the Earth, kind of a turquoise ball floating over there, you know. And so the idea was, you know, they said, well, they resonated. You know how things just kind of resonate.
Uh-huh.
And so... And it was like echoes, like ripples. And my grandfather always says, you know, he says, we're about three echoes away from the real word, you know. So you can imagine that they're up there thinking that there are echoes and there's reverberations. And they look out and they see this blue light and they say, well, the tendency is to want to merge. So they took this blue light and came through the heavens and landed here on the earth with the promise from the Great Spirit that if we continue to love Spirit with every, you know, every bit of our being, huh, and love each other, that everything was going to be all right. That's all you got to do. Love the Creator and love your people, and everything's be all right.
Absolutely.
You got enough food, you got enough water, you got plenty to do. Just take care of the place. Take care of the animals, take care of the trees, take care of the food. Just take care of everything as if it was your mother, right? As if it was like you being in your mother's womb where you were totally sustained, where you don't have to worry about where your food's coming from. You don't have to be concerned about waste. All you got to do is listen to the sound of the heartbeat, you know, the drum, huh?
Right.
Listen to the sound of the blood going through the veins like a rattle. You know, the sound, you know. And dance, you know, just dance. So just enjoy, you know. Eat the food, drink the water, enjoy yourself, play the drum, make yourself rattle, you know. Do the medicine, you know. Be related. Love one another, you know. So that's what my grandfather told me. And so he said that's how our people were born. And we were brought down here on that blue light as part of the blue clan of the star people. And that we were sent here to do those things, to enjoy this place, and to take care of the medicine. We were considered the people of the roots and the herbs, you know, the medicine keepers. And so,
our blue clan, Cherokee blue clan, is the same.
Yeah, the medicine people. And so we just knew all the herbs, you know, and just got to know them all, you know. And there's probably a couple of thousand different herbs around here, and I don't know them all, but I probably know about 300, you know, and I probably know about 50 pretty intimately, but 300 kind of casual, you know, acquaintances, and probably 2,000 people out there, herb people, you know.
Grandfathers,
yeah, and so that's been my story, seeing this. So that's what my grandfather and grandmother have instilled upon me, is this relationship with the plant people, you know, the herbs and animals, but you know, our animal brothers and sisters, you know, I have a real strong affinity for horses, you know, and wolves. And oddly enough, from a lot of people's standpoint, I have a strong relationship with snakes, you know. They,
yeah, me too.
I just kind of get along with them, you
my
know?
Sister loves snakes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They're just like, they're very companion-oriented critters, about contrary to what a lot of people think.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they can be extraordinarily contributing companions, you know.
Good teachers.
Yeah, and we have a couple in our grain house, you know, and they're better than cats, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping them rodents out of there.
Good bull snake. You got one of them, you'll never have rattlesnakes around.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm liking them, you know. And then, and so... That's our story, you know, that we came from the Pleiades, we came down here, you know, and then to enjoy the place. And so, what we've noticed is over the years, huh, how that's kind of gotten out of hand. People just kind of forget, you know, and even when they're supposed to profess to be this way, from the various religious standpoints that they profess, they forget. You know, they start arguing about academic, you know, items, various kinds of things, and basically, it just, if you just kind of drop back to the beginning and go back to where almost every religion and every philosophy and every prophecy says, you know, the same thing, you know, just love one another, be kind to one another, that you can pretty much encapsulate the whole thing to set the book down.
That's what the Kituah chiefs describe the Cherokee religion as a religion of love.
Yes.
We have a video that was shot in 1984 by KJRH Television that has not been seen very much. Bill Jones was with the Tulsa TV station at that time, and he approached and got permission from the Kituah Society to document it. It was close. The chief William Smith had to break the tie because some didn't want the belts shown publicly and other sacred items and parts of ceremonies, but they came right out and described what the Cherokee religion was. It's a religion of love, caring, and there's a lot of confusion among our people because, you know, by the 1880s, there really wasn't much of our culture left, except among the Kituah, probably pockets of Chickamaugas all over the place, but there were a lot of witchcraft being practiced, and so we have a lot of folks that are very angry and resentful too, and so we have both, one balance in the other, and offering people a choice. But if you get a chance, you can go to Kituah-Society, KETOOWAH-Society.org, and you can click on that link, and it's about a 1-hour video, and but see, a lot of the restoration of the Cherokee religion as it's practiced today, Redbird Smith went to your people to obtain a lot of it, the sacred fire had been carried through, was originally with the Natchi people down in Mississippi. We're apparently all part of the Mississippian culture that I guess the Natchez people were the heirs of the Mississippian people that come out of Cahokia, and oddly enough, that was the height of Cahokia, that was the year that Madoc and his people arrived. Oh, we could spin some tales, I suppose. Well, I don't want to keep you too long, but it's up to you how long you want to, you know, if you feel like you're talked out, we'd sure love to have you on another time also, unless you feel like there's something else you want. If you want to go longer, we'd sure welcome you to.
Well, I appreciate it. No, I think what we could do is, you know, if we could kind of I have a few more things I'd like to say, and then probably a good thing to do would be maybe when we get back from Africa, maybe get Grandmother Windwalker on here, the long hair clan mother from Texas, and talk about Africa, maybe, and get Credo, you know, Kusumazulu, Credo Mutwa, and maybe kind of continue on with the changes, the incredible changes as they occur, kind of report them so that people kind of get a sense of what's going on. I'd just like to reiterate the and acknowledge you and thank you for inviting us on your program, your Prophecy
Keepers. Sure.
Prophecy Keepers, and how excited we are to be here. Feel honored and blessed to be a part of this transformation at this time, and let people know about our website, earthkeepers.net, and anybody that wants to pray with us and maybe join us and help us out. You know, we can always use more help with the prison ministry. You can only be so many places and only so many people. You know, there's thousands of prisons in this country, and we have people in every one of them. You know, our Lakota people are, there's just so many Lakota people in prison, and Navajo people, you know, the Dene people are just sick about it. You know, they're trying to build a prison on their own property there, so they're, so their people can be there, you know. It's hard to...
Smart. That'd be smart.
Yeah, it's just really hard, though. I mean, it's just such a difficult thing, and so... we can always use help there, and anybody that wants to find out more about the... peace tour to South Africa, you know, in the spring we're going to be going to Australia. We're going to share money with the Aborigine people and then the Maori people, and then a little bit later next summer we're going back over to Japan with the Ainu people, and then later on next fall we're going back down to South America with the folks down there in the Amazon.
Hey, we got a friend down in southeastern Australia, DK White. He's a friend of Red Elks, and I know he'd love to meet up. How you doing, Dave? we swapped stories, and he married Aboriginal, and got some of the most beautiful, you know, some of the most beautiful children in the world I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Half Aboriginal, half white, or, you know, half or quarter, just absolutely gorgeous people. I mean, you mix anything with anything, and, you know, you get like the mixed blood black gal that won the Miss America some years ago, and she's got a big acting career, and it's really something.
It's
been interrupting. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just, you know, wanting to let people just know, you know, what's going on is with Earth Keepers and some of our relatives around the world here, and invite them to join in participation and contribute and participate, you know, in the changes that are going on at this time, you know, because it's a beautiful time to be here. One of the things we said, my grandfather said, you know, he said the world is perfect. There's just a lot of folks having a bad conversation. And what he said that our purpose here was to lift the level of our personal poetry so that it would reflect the highest aspirations of the characteristics of what it means to be a human being at this time on the planet. So we change the world by the things we say to one another, you know, and then we take those words and put them into actions, and the actions become deeds, and the deeds becomes our character, and the character becomes our destiny. So, you know, I invite people to participate, you know, to just get out and
be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nerf 2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities, such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandem reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandem reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nerf 2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Absolutely, we got
to change. You know?
We've got friends in Australia. White Wolf's a friend. I believe he's Cherokee, and he's teaching down in Australia.
Mm. Yeah, we'll be most of we're going to Sydney, you know, and Perth and Melbourne. You know, we're going to all those places.
Absolutely, our friend Earth Thunder. We interviewed her a while back. She had. Before I met her in which is just, I believe, about 89, 90. You know, she'd been to Australia twice, and very well thought of down there. Another Chickamauga Cherokee. Here, oddly enough, her Cherokee people went out to the Rocky Mountains in Idaho. And when you get a chance to listen to that interview sometime, sure, her people lived, the locals call them Red Dogs, and they live up in the, well, if you've seen the movie Last of the Dog Men, I mean, that's her family, only they were Cherokees. There was Cherokee
dog soldiers.
Yeah, there was Cherokees. They weren't Cheyenne. They were Cherokees that went out there probably about 1721, because there's about a quarter of our nation went to Mexico. There was, you know, stories about the bands that went to the Rocky Mountains that Sequoia was looking for. And but 1951, her people, loggers came in, and they killed all the adults, and they took her and four other younger children. She was 10 at the time, and all the rest of them were just little, and took them to orphanages. And as far as I know, for the first time, she told the story on that interview. Very, very poignant, story, and encourage everybody to listen to that interview. And
yeah,
it's gonna be a real treat if we can get you hooked up with some of our friends down in Australia.
Yeah, one of the ceremonies we're looking forward to in Australia is over there at Uluru. You know, that that stone altar there called Ayers Rock, Uluru. That's, you know, because it's the sister mountain to Stone Mountain here in Georgia.
Huh.
Two of the only granite outcroppings in the world.
That's right.
Yeah, and so they're both kind of like sister altars, and so that's one of the reasons we're going over there is to, this Stone Mountain over here, the Quartz Princess, has been our altar for thousands of years, and so that's one of our main ceremonies in Australia, is Uluru.
Awesome.
And, we're looking forward to it, so yeah, we'd be happy to meet up and find our brothers and sisters over there and ceremony in land down under, huh?
Absolutely. We've got a lot. We've got some interesting things. We got Red Elk. He's been up in Canada now. He's been going to sacred places along with some of the Cree medicine men, and we're hoping when he gets back to his home in Washington. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. A lot.
I'm telling you. That's right.
Well, if you feel like you're all talked out, we're gonna let you take your leave, and
I appreciate it. I appreciate it again. It's just wonderful talking with you, and I just had a great time, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Well, thank you very much, Grandfather Blue Hole.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, and good night to everybody.
Good night.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Everybody, Marie's going to stay. You keep it here, because up next, she's going to set the record straight about a long-standing rumor. Don't miss
Uh-oh.
It. We're back with the very blonde Marie Osmond.
Hello.
And during the commercial, we were talking, and Marie was letting me know. I did not realize that she is one of the co-founders of the Children's Miracle Network, which it's been about 30 years since it's been in existence, and raised billions of dollars for all the proceeds.
Well, this year we'll reach $5 billion for children. And the best part, it's really fun, is that 100% of it has gone to the children.
Good
so,
for you.
Yeah, it's really cool, very unique, nothing like it. It's the number one charity out there for kids of its kind.
And she was saying that she doesn't lend her name to a lot of things, but tell us about your project with the Wise Food Company.
I'm so excited, you guys. You know, I get asked to endorse a lot of things, and my dad always said, two things you protect, your beliefs, your values, and your good name.
Mm-hmm.
So don't lend it out to everything. You know, make sure that you're doing things that you really, really believe in. That is a crazy ring. Shut up.
Thank you.
Okay,
thanks,
anyway,
Marie.
Sorry, I'm blonde. No. So anyway, I come from this family where we used food storage. I know that sounds crazy. But with everything that's been going on, look at Sandy, just here alone.
Yes.
What was it, like $78 billion of damage?
Mm-hmm.
Look at the fires that are going on and the tornadoes and all of that. To not be prepared, we have car insurance, we have health insurance. Why do we not have food? I have done this my whole life. This company has only been in existence now for 4 years, but of all the companies, this is the best.
What
meals,
what do they do?
It's called Wise. Mm-hmm. The meals are about $1 a serving. It's the best food you've ever tasted. It's not your grandma's food. It's not beans and rice and gross stuff.
How do you make it?
Literally, it stores for 25 years. Put it under your bed, and you open up a package, put water, and you eat it. Put it in your car, you know, if you get if on a tornado or whatever.
Yeah, when you're hard-pressed and you want something to eat.
I put two meals in the bottom of my children's backpacks that they take to school in case something happens, so I know they always have something to eat. I'm a mother. I'm a child advocate. And I could, seriously, guys, I could lend my name to a bazillion things, but I believe in this, and I know that this company is the best. I swear to you.
Well, so are you.
No, I did.
Yes, I've enjoyed our conversation.
You're the best.
I have really enjoyed meeting you, Marie.
Well, you're so darling.
Osmond. Marie
Just
Osmond,
call me Marie.
Everybody.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction, and importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. And so you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%, that's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells, yes indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by 3 U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. Simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time. So the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs. And I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to a electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put them on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical and in fact has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the two carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase one detox, and that in itself is a free radical. And obviously, many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important?